Hey everybody, welcome to Magic the Amateuring. I'm one of your hosts, Maria.
I'm another one of your hosts, Megan.
We make up the two hosts of the show, minus our third host is currently a ghost host and cannot be heard through human technology.
Absolutely. We are currently recording ghost host.
Yep. Yep. Oh, sorry. I always talk over ghost host.
I know, you really do.
So
<It's>
rude.
Ghost host just told a really funny joke.
Oh, it was so good. We could tell you guys it was like the perfect joke.
No, but like we can't deliver it the same way that ghost host can. And honestly, I feel like it's a little like insulting towards ghosts for a human to say that joke.
Yeah, we would have to try and do a ghost voice, and that's getting into.
It really is. It's getting into some problematic territory.
Yeah, it's a shame you guys can't hear Ghost Host Thought of Magic because Ghost has played a lot of magic over the years.
Absolutely. Ghost Host was actually our very first pro guest on the show. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's how it is.
Yeah, so sorry, all of you out there. If you are a ghost who listens to our show, you can hear Ghost Host from time to time chiming in.
Absolutely. We really wish that everyone could have your listening experience as far as our podcast is concerned. But not everybody is a ghost yet.
Give it time.
Yep.
On today's episode of Magic the Amateuring, where we talk about magic amongst other things, including ghosts, we're going to talk about the Vintage Super League.
Absolutely.
As well as the Community Super League.
Which we know more about.
Yes, due to the fact that we are in it.
Yes. And also, it doesn't have much to do with vintage.
No. Yeah, my knowledge of vintage is wafer thin.
It's so exciting, though. Every time that I dip my toe into vintage knowledge, I want to take a dive into the pool, but it's a scary deep pool.
It is.
So, you know, today we'll dip maybe all the way up to our ankle.
Whoa! Scandal.
I know.
This is Victorian England.
And ankles, as everyone knows, are the pinnacle of bad behavior.
Yeah, that's just an aphrodisiac to the max.
Absolutely. We're also going to have a For the Noobs on what you can do during your opponent's turn. We're not just talking about the cats that you can spell.
You can spell so many cats during C-A-T-S. C-A-T-S.
That's right.
That would be very annoying to play across from.
Persian cat. P-E-R-S-I-A-N space C-A-T. Persian cat.
Like, what are you doing?
I have no idea. Okay. Just the spells that you can cast during your opponent's turn, but also the sort of things that you can be thinking about, the plans you can be planning, the schemes you can be scheming.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. We're also going to talk about GP New York. New York, in quotes, it was actually New Jersey.
Yes, as so many people from the New York area like to remind us.
They needed to point that out.
Absolutely. I think the percentage of people, or the Venn diagram of people who cared about it being called GP New York and being in New Jersey, and the people who live in the Northeast is a completely overlapping circle.
Well, to be fair, if you know, there was a GP, say, like, in North Dakota, and they're like, GP Minnesota, and I would be like, what?
Yeah. Well, okay, Maria, they already do that because they have GPs in Indianapolis and call them Midwestern GPs.
That's true.
It's like, that's 10 hours from where I live.
Yeah.
That's literally 10 hours. Don't tell me it's in my part of the country.
Wouldn't it be so weird if we lived in a small country and you could actually, top to bottom was like 3-hour drive, like Minnesota or something?
That would be super bizarre.
Sometimes I think about that and I'm like, America is big.
It really is. Well, it's just sort of like when you, like I was in the Netherlands a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Because my uncle lives there. And I, like, it literally is, you know, if you stay on a train for too long, you end up in Germany.
Yeah. Whoops.
So, anyways.
That's how my family got out of East Germany. Train. Oh!
Just stayed on.
There we are.
Oh, hey.
West
guys.
Germany.
Anyway.
So, yeah. That's our show.
We're sticking to it.
That's what I was going to say, but it didn't come out. It didn't come out in time. For the noobs.
Your opponent's turn.
So, Megan, correct me if I'm wrong, but when it's my opponent's turn, shouldn't I just be taking a nap so that my brain is ready for my turn?
Well, Maria, look, your opponent's turn is not like nighttime.
What?
You shouldn't just be sleeping.
I took a Percocet and was out for half of that game.
You should be taking Dayquil as opposed to NyQuil during your opponent's turn if you're going to take one of those two things.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. Sure. I can take some Dayquil.
It's a time when you can be planning, you can be reacting, you can be paying attention, you can be keeping track of the game state, all of these sorts of different wonderful things that hopefully are going to incrementally add up to you playing a better game of Magic.
Incremental advantages over time equal money for you.
That's correct.
If we're being
some sort of
financial about it.
As a financial analogy, that was spot on.
Megan, have you ever taken Mucinex on your opponent's turn?
I have not, because Mucinex scares me.
Let me tell you, it should, because once I took it, and 2 days later, I still felt like I was high. Swear to God.
That's so creepy.
I was sitting at my desk at work, and it was one of those moments where you're like, huh, I wonder if this is all real. And I was like, why am I what did I accidentally eat a mushroom on my burger or something? And then I was like, no, I took Mucinex 2 days ago.
So there you go, everybody. Handy tip, if you're playing Magic, don't take Mucinex while you're doing it.
Nope. Do not.
It's not going to add up to the best game of Magic you could be playing.
And while you cannot always predict what card you are going to draw and how that might change your game plan based on your next turn, mm-hmm. it's always a good idea to be thinking about a few key things while your opponent is playing so that you can have a leg up on them, both on their turn and when the turn gets passed back to you.
Absolutely. So obviously, if you have instants in hand, you can go ahead and think about, or creatures with flash in this case also count, what sort of circumstances you're going to want to cast them under, because they are the spells that you can cast during your opponent's turn. So if you have something like, say, an ultimate price, you're going to want to think, if your opponent already has a creature on board, you might be thinking, okay, if they attack me, do I want to ultimate price before I take damage? Or do I want to go ahead and I have some buffer on my life total, so I want to go ahead and I'll let them hit me with that creature, and then I'll see if they play anything better that I'm going to want to kill instead. If you have something like a negate in hand or a counterspell, you might be thinking about what do you know about your opponent's deck and what sorts of cards are they going to play that would make you want to cast those spells.
Right.
That also has the advantage of, say you have a negate in hand and you've decided your opponent you know is playing a collected company type deck. And on their own turn, for some reason, they choose to ultimate price your creature and you have a negate in hand. If you've already decided in your head, hey, if they ultimate price something, I'm okay with it, I'm going to save this negate for a collected company, then you're not going to give away any information when they go to ultimate price. You don't have to sit around thinking about that ultimate price right then, giving away that you have a negate in hand.
Yeah, you're also not going to waste time on your own clock.
Absolutely. Some people also play it the other way, where whether or not they have a negate in hand, when their opponent goes to cast a non-creature spell, or the same thing goes for a counter spell.
Sure.
When their opponent casts anything, they'll pause for a second and think about it so that they're not giving away that they do or
I
they
have
don't.
This negate. Exactly. Maybe I don't. It's kind of similar note. I know this is about my turn, not my opponent's turn. But if I'm drawing dead, I've noticed when I play across from people, sometimes they'll draw and be like, go. Or whatever. And let's look at it very quickly. It's obviously a land or something that doesn't impact the board. Unless they're like very good at bluffing me. Which usually isn't the case. But I will always look at the card in my hand and consider it as if it were something that really is going to swing the game in my favor.
Exactly. As if that card is so important. It has lots of relevant text pieces.
Planar Outburst. Okay, I'll just look at that and kind of leave it there.
Interesting. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Very
interesting. Yeah. Nice.
So you can also, on your opponent's turn, be evaluating where you feel you are in the dynamic. Are you currently the aggressor, or are you currently on defense? And then that's going to help you inform what you're going to want to do on your own turn. And again, that's relevant as a, you know, in concerning the cards that are in your hand, concerning the cards that you're hoping to draw, concerning the ways that you're going to block or not block when your opponent goes to attack.
Right. So am I blocking because I'm being very defensive and I want to survive and I want to protect my life total? Or am I not so concerned and I'm letting the damage through because I feel that in this race, it's going to end up being something that I'm going to win. I just have better creatures. I have creatures with evasion. These creatures are too valuable to me to waste. as Trump blockers or traitors in the game. It's important to assess that. Not only just like, oh, well, this will trade, I'll block with it, but rather, is it going to be more advantageous for you to have that creature around next turn to attack?
Absolutely. Potentially. You also might want to be thinking, so if you are very much ahead, you sort of are feeling like, do you know what? This game is going great.
I'm
going
to take a Mucinex.
Because I don't need to be... I don't need to be cognizant of what's happening for the rest of this.
I want my creatures to really have flying.
You can think about what sorts of things that could happen in the game state, what cards your opponent could play, what sequence of things could happen, what sequence of draws from them and draws on your own side could lead to you losing that advantage.
Yeah.
And the same thing goes for if you're really behind on board or on cards in hand, you just feel like you're kind of in a hole and you're going to need to claw your way back out. You can start thinking about, okay, what are the outs in my deck that I can draw?
That's called playing to your outs, everybody.
Exactly. That then helps you make decisions based on, you know, what you need to win the game. So for instance, if you're like, the only way that I can possibly win this game is if I draw a Languish in the next two turns.
Yep.
That again can inform what kind of spells you're going to counter if you have counter spells in hand, the ways that you're going to block if your opponent attacks you and you have blockers available, and if you have any spot removal in your hand, the ways that you're going to use that spot removal. So if you are going to draw Languish in the next two, if you have to draw Languish in the next two turns in order to not lose, and you have a Ruinous Path in hand, but that doesn't make a difference in the race either way, then you can, you know, take a moment to be like, hey, maybe I need to save this Ruinous Path for a follow-up Planeswalker.
Yeah.
If I draw that Languish that I need. Because then that's going to allow you to not cast that spell when it's not going to make a difference.
And I think this is being familiar with your deck, too. If you're primarily a limited player, which many people are, I think that something that's kind of a level-up moment is taking the time to become familiar enough with your deck before that first round that you're even able to play to your out. Because I think sometimes we just build this, you're like, yes, it's a miraculous, and then you sit down there and you're like, God, did I put in... two copies of X, or was it only one?
Exactly. You know, it's the old adage that everybody knows. Only play your friends, never play a stranger.
What do you mean?
Just exactly what it sounds like, right?
Like, so I only ever play you, I never play somebody I don't know?
No, not like play
you
versus.
You mean the cards.
I mean never play a stranger. You've heard the saying, never play a stranger.
Yeah, in the con game, though, it was only play a stranger. When I was a con artist.
Oh.
You don't want to con my friends, you know?
This explains why I wasn't a very good con artist.
Yeah. See, people, you just Thanks. Conned all your friends right away.
My con teacher told me only con your friends.
My con teacher?
Yeah. Didn't you have a con teacher?
Yeah, but we didn't call him that. I called him Master Jorge.
That's a... Okay.
I mean, it wasn't his real name.
No, of course not. That's for sure. Because even when you only con strangers, you also have to con your friends sometimes.
And sometimes you have to con yourself, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Into thinking that, like, this life is worth it. I got out. I got out and started doing magic podcasts, thank God.
Yeah.
But I almost got trapped.
Well, you know, I was thinking that sometimes you have to con yourself. So that's when I take a Mucinex so I can do stuff that I won't remember later. Because it's like, you know, if I have to get up on the stand and testify against myself, I can say,
I don't know.
Do you know what? I don't remember stealing all of that gold and selling it. I was out.
I was not sure that it was actually real. It could have been a dream as far as I was concerned.
Exactly.
So what we're trying to say is be vigilant on your opponent's turn. It's not a time to take a snooze, okay? I'm especially guilty. This is like the number one way that I know that I'm not paying attention is I'm not used to playing counter spells because I usually don't draft those kinds of decks or play those kinds of decks. So like if I have a counter spell in hand, I can't tell you the number of times that I've just been like, yep, oh my God!
No!
And you know why? Because I wasn't paying attention during my opponent's turn. And it can be as simple as moving that card to the front of your hand so that you know that it's reminding you that it's available to you if you should choose to accept it / use it.
Oh, man. So speaking of counterspells, the other day, like, I guess not the other day, but a couple weeks ago in draft, someone played that three blue blue counter spell that you then investigate three times.
Jace's blah blah blah.
I don't think it's Jace's. I think that this counter spell belongs to itself.
Oh. Okay.
But anyways, I don't remember the name. Okay. But it's the rare. It's like a rare.
A rare.
It's
of course
three
it
blue
is.
Blue, and then you investigate three times, and you know it's not a card that I've picked in Shadows because I haven't ever felt the the desire for a card like that.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, oh, holy crap.
It's confirmed suspicions.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
There it is.
So anyways.
Yeah.
It just felt gross. It was so gross. They counted it and then they...
And got three and clue tokens?
Got three clues and I was barf. Like, oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
Oh, my.
Oh, my.
Oh, my.
If you have any tips of what you would do on your opponent's turn to kind of keep yourself in the game, just send us a little Twitter tweet at MTAcast and let us know in, 140 characters or less what you do. How you do you.
Yeah, man.
When you play blue or any other color. Community Super League Weekly Update!
That's right. This past week marked the second week of the Community Super League, which we are playing in along with a lot of other wonderful, delightful, and hilarious people. It's obviously a little bit more casually focused.
It's a little casual.
A lot more casually focused than some of the other Super Leagues that they have done. But it also means that there have been some complete... There's a lot of freedom for some wacky
great
brews.
Decks. Great
absolutely.
Decks. Yeah, Community Super League, if you haven't had a chance to check it out yet, it's on Thursday nights, starts at 6 p.m. Pacific time on twitch.tv/magic.
Wait, it's going to start at 5
p.m.
this coming week.
It's
going to
start at 5 p.m.
Pacific time.
Pacific time. So
don't ask us what time that is in any other time zone.
No, don't know. Can't do time zones.
Nope.
/ too lazy. Yeah, so just tune in at some point on Thursday night. It'll probably be on.
Just take a guess.
The cool thing about it is this is members of the community building decks, playing against each other, battling, and also doing commentary on other matches, which in and of itself is very fun to see.
Absolutely.
Because it's more casually oriented commentary, and we also try and explain the cards and what they do a little bit more.
Yeah, so it's great commentary for players who don't necessarily know as much about the cards.
Right.
So there's like the fun aspect for players who are super experienced getting to see these really
inventive brews
and inventive decks. And then, if you don't know as much, definitely tune into it because we always talk about all of like the important cards and the important interactions that are going on in very noob friendly ways.
Yeah, and we had some amazing decks last week, which was Innistrad Plane Constructed, meaning the three previous Innistrad sets as well as the current one, Shadows Over Innistrad.
Absolutely.
Whatever you wanted, make a deck out of them. We had some incredibly just creative stuff that we saw.
Yes.
And I think the deck that, so I should mention before we talk about this very quickly, besides having a record like in the league based on your wins and losses, there's also the Brewmaster title, which goes to the person who got the most votes for the most creative decks throughout the Community Super League. And the team that currently leads that is Loading Ready Run with my favorite deck of the night.
It really captured everybody's hearts. How could it not?
Singleton Hats.
Absolutely. So it was one of, they were all one ofs.
Yep.
And every non-land card had to have a hat in it.
Had to have a hat. Absolutely. I mean, Gone Missing was my absolute favorite use.
It's an iconic
just,
hat.
It's just a hat. And the deck turned out to be surprisingly good, even on a mull to three.
Absolutely.
Or four. I can't remember.
I think it was four.
I mean, it was ridiculous.
But it was still pretty neat to watch.
I mean,
so they managed to win their match.
Champion of the Parish has a hat on, everybody, and that's
absolutely
a good card.
As does Tenacity. Ton of hats in that one.
So really, I feel like they played humans. They like found a really sneaky way to play the really good humans deck by calling it a hats deck.
Although to be fair, like it was only
singleton.
One of
yeah,
it was only singletons.
That's true.
And there were, a lot of hats going
there
on.
There were.
They also, so they had a Westvale Abbey in there.
Yeah.
Which some people were like, what? And the marshal was like, so their rule is that they're only allowed to make the cleric tokens because the clerics have hats on.
They cannot summon Ormondal.
No. Ormondal's not wearing
He's
a
not
hat.
Not wearing a hat.
What demon does?
No.
I
can't think of one. Except, like, the devil back in, like, old Puritan times was said to wear a high-crowned hat.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Very fancy. The devil was a fancy guy back in the day.
And he's just kind of lowered his standards, as we all do, yeah, over time.
I mean, nobody wears those big top hats anymore.
No, they don't.
Not even Satan himself. He's gone to a newsboy cap. It's really, I mean, he's a couple years behind.
Wow. I just can't imagine that in any flattering way.
Neither can I.
No, it's super problematic. Like, he becomes...
We all know the guy.
Immediately one-tenth as intimidating. Imagining him in a newsboy cap.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, nope. Okay.
Nobody wants to tell him that, like, that fad is gone.
Exactly. All of the lesser devils are sort of like, should we tell him?
Even just a fedora?
Should we
switch it out? Should we just burn it when he's not looking?
No. I don't know what we should do about this.
It's difficult.
Gosh.
Another great deck we saw was in second place was Gabby's deck, Triska Decaphobia, which I believe Megan named.
Yes, that's true.
Great name. Which had 13 instances of the number 13 in it. Of course, played Triska Decaphobia.
Yep. We almost got to see it win.
Oh, it was so close.
But we got the...
Something even better.
The consolation prize was equally as great because it was Kenji winning a game with Dirtle Surge.
Yeah.
Which was a bunch of permanents, including a lot of ways to make...
Mana dorks.
Yeah, like lots of mana dorks, lots of ramp, some laboratory maniacs, and a single copy, the only non-permanent in the deck, Primal Surge.
Primal Surge! It costs 10, so what you do when you cast it is you go get everything in your library.
Absolutely. So you exile the top card of your library. If it's a permanent, you put it onto the battlefield and repeat the process. And obviously, when the rest of your deck is full of permanents, you know.
And then Laboratory Maniac is out there. He also had, Tireless Tracker to make clues?
Absolutely. So, with the Laboratory Maniacs and the clues that this deck made, you didn't even have to wait until your next turn to win.
No.
Because you could crack a clue, and because the Laboratory Maniac is in play, which says if you would draw a card and there are no cards, instead of losing, you win.
Yeah.
So you get to win right away.
So Kenji's deck, great. He's in third place. Marshall Absolutely. Is coming up in fourth place with a spider spawning deck because of course he made that.
Of course.
Great.
Was overall super exciting. We're very excited for this coming week's
Yes, we are.
Decks, which are Tribal Wars.
Tribal Wars. We should talk quickly about the deck that we made, which was Miracles in the Ice.
Absolutely. And we got paired against
a similar deck.
A similar deck from Wedge over at the Mana Source, who was playing Burning Vengeance Blue-Red.
Yeah.
And we were playing Blue-Red Miracles.
With Thing in the Ice.
With Thing in the Ice. We almost got there with
it.
Almost got there.
Those were pretty interesting matches. A lot of awoken Thing in the Ices.
That was a lot of fun. I mean, all I really wanted to do was flip that horror.
Yeah, and we did. We sure did. Yeah, so as Megan mentioned, Tribal is coming up this week, so make sure you tune in. I don't want to spoil it.
But we can tell you that we picked Hounds.
Yeah, we picked Hounds.
We'll only tell you that our tribe is Hounds.
Oh, yeah. We might do some testing, so if you caught us on stream, you might know a little bit more than that.
Absolutely.
But we're really excited for a deck, and the other picks were all equally as exciting.
Equally as exciting. We won't spoil anybody's.
They're so good,
but,
though.
But they're pretty good.
What? That's a tribe? Oh, yep. It's great.
For those wondering, a tribe is any creature type.
Yeah.
So it could be, you know, angels. Humans, elves,
demon.
Those are all some classic tribes.
Rhino, would you ever play some?
No.
Rhinos?
Nope.
Maybe?
No.
You want to maybe?
Nope. No.
4 or 5.
No.
And gain some life.
Nope.
Okay.
No.
There's a couple of rhinos.
Nope.
And
nope. No.
We have to use the legacy ban list, number one.
Yep.
We cannot use any card that hoses like a tribe. So
absolutely.
Cards that do that, and we must have 10 standard legal cards in the
10
deck.
10 standard legal creatures.
Creatures, okay.
Absolutely.
So yeah, those are the only rules we need to adhere to, so we're really excited.
We are.
I think our deck's pretty good.
It's going to be ridiculous.
At least the name is great, if nothing else.
Get excited.
So get into the Twitch room on Thursday night to check that out. Not only is the Community Super League happening.
Absolutely.
There's another league that, you know, is also super.
What? They let more than one league happen at the same time?
Yeah, it's like...
I thought it was a Highlander type situation. Just, you know, overall.
It's
like
the only one. Yeah.
Exactly. That's why all of the kickball teams have to play each other because they're fighting to see who's going to play against the other sports leagues.
What if there was like the okay, whoever wins the World Series versus whoever wins the Stanley Cup versus whoever wins the Super Bowl. Yes,
that's what I was thinking of, except like only on a city level, so all of like the city summer sports leagues. So it's like the winning kickball team has to go play the winning ultimate
frisbee team. But what game do they play? Like a combination?
They play a combination game. They play a combination kickball ultimate frisbee.
That sounds awesome.
Then they play combination for like ultimate frisbee baseball. Like,
wow, the hockey football one is gonna get weird. Ooh,
that's gonna get violent.
Yes, this sounds like a terrifying game. Somebody's gonna die.
Combination hockey football because is a nightmare.
The field has to be as big as a football field. Everybody's on skates. Yeah. They're still trying to score with a football, but only into a little net.
Only in a tiny net. And there's also a puck, and everybody has sticks. I think we invented lacrosse. Like, I think that's what we just did.
We invented lacrosse in Alaska. That's yep. How they play. Ooh, I would watch that. Anyway, Vintage Super League, much like the Community Super League, pits popular players against each other, building and brewing their own vintage decks. And if you're not familiar with the vintage format, basically, you get to use the widest card pool.
Go fucking crazy.
In the history of Magic.
It does have some restricted cards.
It does, but...
So, whew. Power 9, you can only have one copy. You can't run around jamming 4 Black Lotus into your deck.
But you can jam one in there, and a lot of times that's enough.
It's pretty sweet.
Don't isolate that quote.
what was the single quote?
I don't want to repeat myself.
No.
But yeah, I don't know a lot about vintage, but it's very, very powerful decks, obviously.
Absolutely. And so what they're doing right now is this past week marked the first week of the Vintage Super League play-ins. So the way that the Vintage Super League works is that players, they're, you know, every new season, there's several spots that open up. So they kick out the worst, the most poorly performing players.
What if they did that to us in the Community Super League? It's very sad.
So they kick out, you know, the poorest performing players, and then they open up those spots and they have a big play-in, and the play-in is what's happening right now. There's 4 open spots on the Vintage Super League, and I think 10 people, is it 10 or 12, people competing.
Let's find out.
To get in.
So we've got the bracket here in front of me.
Yes, and it's a double elimination bracket.
Ooh.
So it looks 12. It's 12 people.
12.
So 12 people playing in for 4 spots. It's double elimination, which means
this one says 10.
Oh, well, there were definitely 12 people on that page.
Huh, interesting. Okay.
Well, anyways.
Some number of people.
Some number of people are playing in for 4 spots, 10 or 12. And, now you really confused me.
I mean,
you can't tell me that there's, you can't tell me 10 or 12. I need to know.
maybe
called hard facts.
I mean, maybe it's the play-in that's, oh my God.
So anyways, I'm going to try.
I'm going to literally count this right here.
Go ahead.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12.
Nailed it.
Okay.
Okay, so anyways, 12 people playing for 4 spots, double elimination, which means that you get to lose 2 times before you're completely out of the running.
I thought double elimination was you could only go to the bathroom twice during any duration of the Vintage Super League.
During the whole Super League?
Yeah.
Do you realize it lasts for a week?
That's why it's so hard.
Oh boy.
Yikes.
Randy's really putting the pressure on these players in more ways than one. And really some very interesting ways. So obviously,
I have a question, though.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
So why don't they just play, like, the best vintage decks in the format?
Well, because vintage isn't... this is actually very interesting because there was just a new vintage restriction.
Yeah.
Because there was a deck that a lot of people were considering, like, hey, this kind of looks like it's dominating vintage.
Sure.
And some people have pointed to the Vintage Super League as the way that this was found out. Because, you know, beforehand... it's obviously difficult, even online and definitely in paper, to get a hold of the cards that you need to play vintage.
Yeah, you don't
in person.
See a lot of vintage events happening.
Exactly. And it's not, you know, it's not a Grand Prix format and it's not a Pro Tour format. So you don't necessarily get a lot of vintage playing visibility. So the Vintage Super League is super interesting in that it gives that visibility to a format that not a lot of people get to see all the time. And so people were like, wait, now that we're seeing this format a bunch, there's a deck that, that appears to be maybe kind of broken and definitely dominating the field, which was Shops, which is an artifact-based deck that uses a card called Mishra's Workshop.
Mishra?
Yes, and that says tap, add 3 to your mana pool. It's just a regular old land.
Okay.
It's not even a legendary land. You could have as many of these in play. Well, you know, 4 of these in play. Tap, add 3 to your mana pool, spend this mana only to cast artifact spells.
Yeah, you can draft this in Cube a lot online, mm-hmm. so I've played with it there. I mean, obviously, straight busted.
Crazy powerful. Just a land that says, oh, hey, I'm not
Here's
one
three
land.
Mana.
I'm 3 lands.
Here you go.
Happy birthday.
Merry Christmas.
And it also used a card, the card Lodestone Golem, which for 4 mana is a 5/3 that says non-artifact spells cost 1 more to cast.
Yeah.
So not only are you getting a crazy mana advantage, you've gotten so power hungry, you're telling your opponents who don't have artifact spells, I'm also making your stuff more expensive.
And this card we saw in Modern Masters... So yes. we've gotten the chance to play with it as well there.
Yeah, there was an artifact deck in Modern Masters.
Yeah.
So very recently, Lodestone Golem was restricted, which means you can only play a single copy of it.
Yeah.
As opposed to the 4 that these Shops decks were playing.
Isn't it funny? You think, like, in a deck like this, I'm looking at Kai Buddha's Stax deck here, mm-hmm. That there's actually not... the most creatures that you would ever imagine. There's only 2 Wyrmcoil Engine, 2 Phyrexian Metamorphs, and 3 Phyrexian Revokers, 1 Lodestone Golem.
Yeah, well, if you're looking at these decks, actually, that's a lot of creatures for Vintage.
Yeah. But I'm like, what is it abusing? Oh, here's... Mm-hmm. What does this card do? This is the deck's namesake, Smokestack. Costs 4, it's an artifact, duh. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may put a soot counter on Smokestack. At the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player sacrifices a permanent, for each soot counter on Smokestack. Oh, yikes.
So, everybody sacrifices everything.
Okay.
All of the things go away. So, So, to answer your question, that's one of the ways, or that's one of the reasons why there's not currently one deck that everybody's sort of like, this is the most powerful deck.
And even before... Is just because of Lodestone Golem?
Well, even before that restriction, it's still, you know, pretty open. There, you know, Shops was very powerful, but other decks are also viable.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, there's not necessarily one deck that everybody's like, you should play this, it is the best.
And I suppose it's still, you know, it evolves like any format does with the release of new cards.
Yeah, exactly.
Potentially.
Notably when Treasure Cruise came out, everyone's like, I can play a second Ancestral
Recall. I'll play
Recall.
That. Sure.
Wonderful.
So are these any of these Vintage Super League decks that you want to talk about that people are bringing to the table?
Yeah, so one that I'm excited about is there's an Oath deck in here.
Oh, Oath.
Yeah, so remember when we were like...
What does this card do?
It was Forbidden Orchard, and we were like, why would you do this?
Yeah.
You know, you tap it for mana and give someone a spirit.
Yeah.
What?
Why?
Exactly. Why would you do that?
We were quickly told on Twitter
everyone
why.
Told us. It's because there's this deck which uses Oath of Druids, which is a 1 in a green enchantment that says, at the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player chooses target player who controls more permanents, more creatures than he or she... That controls more creatures than he or she does.
You can get through
and
it.
And is his or her opponent. The first player may reveal cards from the top of his or her library until he or she reveals a creature card.
If
he or she does, that player puts that card into the battlefield and all other cards reveal this way into his or her graveyard.
Oh, Megan, boy. I'm not alive anymore. It took so long to read.
I know. I'm really sorry. I've aged considerably.
I'm just a pack of old gray bones in a grave.
No, you can't be a ghost. We already have one ghost host.
Oh. Yeah, I agree, ghost host.
Good
great,
point.
Great,
Good
great
point,
point,
ghost host. So anyways, basically what this card says is that on each player's upkeep, if your opponent controls more creatures than you do, you get to reveal cards from your library until you reveal a creature and then put that creature into play. So this, you use that strange land that puzzled us so much, Forbidden Orchard, to give your opponent a spirit, and then they have more creatures than you, and then you reveal creatures, and then you put into play a Gristle Daddy.
There's only one in this deck.
Mm-hmm. A lot of them only play, you know, 1 or 2. And then this deck is a little bit different in that it doesn't play an Emrakul. Because Oath decks also play a single Emrakul.
Cool.
Which also helps you
Emrakul, keep... Emrakul, more like.
Emrakul. Which also keeps you from maybe accidentally milling yourself to death.
Yeah.
Because you do put all those cards into your graveyard, not like back underneath your library or shuffle your library or something like that.
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, we learned something there many episodes ago. But yes, there it sure is did. In practice.
Anyways, it's just, it's always, it's kind of a cool deck.
Yeah, it looks cool.
So, yeah, that's one of the ones. There's also a lot of Mentor decks, Monastery Mentor, a card that came out not that long ago.
Yeah, Khans of Tarkir.
And definitely has a home in Vintage because it has prowess. And also, whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you get a 1/1 monk with prowess. And in Vintage, as you pointed out, not a ton of creatures.
No.
Everybody's casting spells, so you can make
so 12, many.
12 kajillion monks.
Yeah, we've got 4 Monastery Mentors in this build because give me a break.
Exactly. What are you going to do? Cast spells. Great.
Okay. Interesting.
Awesome. Point is, you should definitely go check out the Vintage Super League because while it's a terrifying and scary unknown deep pool, it's like a dam. It's like a damned river of information. Do you know what's scary,
Maria? A damned river. This is a damned river. It's a damned river of information.
Damn this river. Damn it. Oh my God. I meant like there's a dam. Oh. Dams are really scary, which is what I was trying to get across.
Megan is terrified of dams. True story.
So point is, it is scary, but it's also super exciting. And it's like, it's so interesting to learn about. And it is so crazy the ways that these decks operate and the powerful things that they can do.
Yeah, if you've ever wanted to get a grasp on like why some older cards are as powerful as they are,
mm-hmm.
or like what does this card do and why is it good?
Exactly. Vintage or what Super are some League. Of the more idiotic combos that wizards have allowed to happen in the world?
Yeah. any of those reasons are a great reason to check out Vintage Super League. It's on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Pacific time. And of course, you can watch replays on YouTube afterwards, the same as you can with Community Super League. So there you go.
Yeah, bro.
Vintage Super League comes highly recommended by me.
And me.
Ghost Toast.
Ghost Toast.
Mm-hmm. GP New York!
Hey, everybody. There is a Grand Prix in the grand city of grand old Grand New York.
Or somewhere near there.
You know, in the vicinity.
In the vicinity. And we had a wonderful top 8 at Grand Prix New York.
Absolutely. It was not in New York, but it was in New York's favorite cousin.
Yeah. Favorite cousin.
New Jersey. But it was called Grand Prix New York because everybody likes to say New York. Nobody likes to say the words New Jersey.
You've never heard this song. New Jersey, New Jersey, a wonderful town.
That's too many syllables.
Yeah, that didn't
New
work.
Jersey, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Anyways. The winner.
Seth Manfield.
Seth Manfield. Somebody who's been on a streak recently.
Man, he's hot as hot.
He's hot to trot.
I was going to say he's hot as gasoline, but that's not a thing.
As hot as gasoline has the potential to be.
Absolutely.
We were going through his recent appearances and we're like, I think he was the top 8 of the Pro Tour. Yes, indeed.
He certainly was playing Esper Control.
Esper Control. So absolutely. Well done to him there.
Then he was in the top 32 of Grand Prix Toronto playing 4 color Cryptolith Rites.
Yep.
And then, well, what do you know?
Black-White Control won the day at GP New York.
Won himself a Grand Prix.
Yeah, this is interesting considering he was playing 3 different decks at these different tournaments.
Absolutely. He is not a one-trick pony.
No, he is very versatile and it can show that he can easily sort of transition between events and work out the meta for whatever that weekend is.
Exactly. He is a multi-trick horse.
Which is
as hot as gasoline has the potential to be.
You know the Triple Crown?
Yeah.
The title used to be multi-trick horse.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You have to win 3 different races and they're all of different lengths.
Yeah.
So you can't be a racehorse who's only good at winning one distance of race.
No.
There's a short one, a long one, and a medium one.
Yep.
You start with the medium. You go short, long. Just in case everyone was wondering what the different lengths of the Derby, the Belmont, and the Preakness are.
Do you know my family has played the Kentucky Derby with each other where we don't bet or anything, but we each pick 6 horses, and then, you know, whoever wins is like, yay, you win. So it's really competitive.
Yeah.
But for the past, I think, literally 10 years, mm-hmm. I have not won.
Oh, wow.
This year,
statistically,
I won.
Did you pick NyQuil?
Yeah, I did. But this is also, we don't pick based on any stats. We are not allowed to look at the stats. We just pick based on names of the horse.
Yeah.
And as you heard me talk about my problems with Mucinex earlier in the show, you'll know why I chose NyQuil. I have a problem, send help.
The horse's name was actually Nyquist, but
yeah,
what are
close,
you doing?
It was close naming. Enough.
Although my other favorite horse name was Exaggerator.
Yeah, this is good.
Perfect horse name.
I did.
Perfect
you race know, horse name. It's interesting to me that they sometimes take the mom horse and the dad horse and they put their names together, and that's why horses have such bizarre names.
Yeah, sometimes their names are not good.
And I'm just like, what?
Sure, whatever. Or they just want to prove it that the horse has that fancy lineage.
Like, what would my name be? Julie Dick? It's terrible.
Wow, I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
That sucks.
It would have been, if I was a horse, my life would be terrible.
If you portmanteaued my parents' names, I could be Ello.
that's cute.
Right?
That's cute.
You can just call me Ello from now on.
Ello.
Ello.
Oh, I would just be Dickie.
Hey, everybody. This is a podcast about race horses hosted by Ello and Dickie.
That's definitely a British show that definitely exists.
It really is. Oh, and then we can talk about steeplechases.
Ooh, we could also talk about dressage.
Ooh, dressage can go fuck itself.
Do you want to see my impression of a dressage horse? Because sure. I just did it, but here it is again. I'm fancy. Speaking of magic,
yep.
Horse dancing.
Yes.
Yeah, Black White Control, we talked about it last week on the podcast if you want to know more about it. Interesting Planeswalker-centered deck.
Lots of Planeswalkers. Gideon, four of them, three Obnixilis.
Yeah.
And Maria moved the mouse so I can't see the screen.
There it is.
Listen, Dickie, get your act together.
Don't call it.
Two Sorin Grim Nemesis.
Yeah. Something I wanted to mention is this four-color deck. Scott Lipp was playing, and a lot of other players, four-color deck, Cryptolith Rite, based around the card, of course, Cryptolith Rite.
Although at its heart, it is another collected company deck.
It is a collected company deck.
It also has the fun combo finish of Zulaport Cutthroat, Brood Monitor, and Eldrazi Displacer.
That's infinite!
Oh, snap! For those of you who don't know the cards or the interaction necessarily, Brood Monitor is the 3/3 for 6 that comes into play with 3 Eldrazi Scions.
Babies, happy Mother's Day.
And the Eldrazi Displacer, you can pay 3 colorless, or no, 2 and a white.
2 and a white.
2 and a white to displace things.
Yeah.
So you can tap those Scions or sack them as need be. Well, eventually you need to sack them. So you just make infinite Scions and then sack them all and get infinite triggers off of that Zulaport Cutthroat.
Yeah, it's a pretty good, seems pretty good. Yeah, you just play
two. It's 2 and a colorless.
It costs.
Okay.
Yeah, 2 and a white.
So Displacer itself costs 3 and a white, or 2 and a white. But you only need 2 and a color, so you can just sack all 3
Seems
of those to
great.
Activate the ability, flicker the Brood Monitor, get 3 more Scions, sack them, activate the ability, flicker Brood Monitor, get 3 more Scions, and meanwhile your opponent's dying.
Yeah. So Cryptolith Rite, if you're not familiar, 1 and a green, enchantment creatures you control have tap, add 1 color of any... 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. The reason that this interests me is because we just got out of a format where the fixing was so incredible, thanks to the dual lands, that people were playing 4 and 5 colors willy-nilly.
Just all the time.
And then we got into this format
just
and we're
all
like,
the time.
Oh, thank God, we won't have any more of that craziness anymore. People will have
Here
to pick 2 colors and stick with
it. Here it is.
But it's back.
Here it is.
I mean.
Right in the top 8 of this GP.
I thought we were going to finally have some.
How dare it.
Streamlined 2-color, 1-color decks with a splash maybe. Here it is again.
How could these decks do it to us?
Oh, boy.
How could they?
How could they? So it's decks we've, seen. 4-color Cryptolith, there's another one. Of course, Grixis Control was there. Green White Tokens, which won the Pro Tour. Another copy of White Black Control. And another tokens deck. So, Mike Sigrist was playing green-white tokens, notably, went almost, I think, I don't...
He went 15-0.
15-0.
In Swiss.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Oh, man, I kind of wish he had, I mean...
if he had won, it would have been sick.
Oh, a perfect GP.
Perfect GP.
Who did LSV do a perfect GP once in his career?
No, he was the only person to do a perfect Swiss Pro Tour.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But then did not win that Pro Tour, so.
Sad. I feel like
bummer.
If you get that far, I just want to give it to you, honestly.
Right.
I'm, like, not even being funny. Like, seriously, at that point, you're like, why are we doing a top 8? That's ridiculous. You win.
No, I mean, a top 8 is a top 8.
Did they win? Did they lose in some matches earlier? They did. And did LSV? Well, no, he didn't.
Well, okay.
I mean, shouldn't that be if you have a perfect Swiss and then you cut to top eight, you automatically win no top eight?
Only in this situation.
Yes, where you...
But what if there's only one person who only lost one round and everyone else in the top eight lost two?
Then that's fine. Then they can play.
So you're saying it's an exception.
If it's a perfect record.
But Maria, that's why top eights exist. You have to win the top eight.
I guess. I just think, what an accomplishment. And to just not win the whole thing after doing that.
Well, you get to say that you did it.
That's true.
Which is the same reason why I eat peanuts.
To say you did it?
Yep.
You don't like peanuts?
Nah, they're fine.
What? How could you? Peanuts are the most amazing food ever invented.
Look, honestly, I eat peanuts so that I feel included on planes.
Why don't you eat the... Because if you get the pretzels, you're like,
I'm not going to eat the pretzels.
What a butthole.
Yeah, the pretzels are not okay.
What about the cookies?
Oh, if I'm on Delta, I get those cookies.
Those cookies are great.
Who doesn't get a fucking Biscoff when offered one?
Ooh, I love those
so
cookies.
So good. Anyways.
Yeah. Anyway, congrats to Seth Manfield on taking down New York.
Pretty sweet accomplishment.
Great job on being so flexible with your decks across the weekend.
It is testament super cool. To his and as everyone mentioned ability. Already, like it's very promising when there's three different or eight different decks in the top eight of a pro tour, and then to have someone do well across three events with three different decks, I think is also a really nice.
And
sign.
Innovation is still happening, which is evident by these rights decks. LSV won 11-4 with a Tarka rights, which this deck is also sweet.
Yeah.
It plays Dragonlord Tarka, of course, from its name, collected company, and Cryptolith rights, as we see Duskwatch Recruiter, of course, and Eldrazi Skyspawner.
Mm.
What?
Exciting.
I mean, I guess you're just jamming all the good things in here because Displacer is in here as well as Reflector Mage.
Yeah, man.
I mean, get in the deck. They're just playing good cards.
And who doesn't want to just play good cards?
I mean, nobody.
Nobody.
Sometimes I want to play bad cards that together are good.
Oh, that makes sense. That's what lots of people do.
So there's also
Green-Black Aristocrats or Green-Black Sacrifice
that's true.
Plays Blister Pods and Loam Dryads.
They're better when they're together.
They're friends.
So yeah, a really cool tournament, and we're going to keep watching how the meta shifts in the coming weeks leading up to GP Minneapolis over
Which
Memorial Day.
We will be playing, and we're very excited
yes.
to see you at.
Yeah, so
if you're going to be there, give us a shout out and come find us.
Yeah, we will have a special present for people who find us on the floor.
Absolutely.
With your name on it. That's a lie. It won't be personalized to that extent, but we will give you a high five.
Yeah, we will. And we'll say your name as we high five you.
Yes. That's a promise. Flavortext Theater presents Make It Innistrad.
That's right. We currently have a super flavorful set with some cool mechanics. So we're going to take a pack of Magic Origins, and we are going to open up these cards and make them Innistrad.
Yeah. So core sets were used to be known for kind of their very basic nature, not very flavorful, although Origins was more flavorful.
Yeah, it has
than
a lot of story elements with its central five planeswalkers.
But we're going to Innistradify these cards.
Absolutely.
Just because, why not?
Doesn't like to inject a little flavor into things that don't have it anyways.
I mean, have you ever cooked where you've just like injected like flavor into like meat?
What are you talking about, like with a syringe?
I mean, yeah, I kind of am. I for some reason I think that's something you do, like you have like a juice and you know
I'm sure that's a thing that someone somewhere does at a restaurant. But would I personally buy a syringe with a needle on it and fill it with stuff to then stab a steak? No, I wouldn't.
Maybe you don't take your steak seriously enough.
Probably not.
All right, so let's Innistrad up these cards. I'm excited. I'm like in R&D right now.
I was just going to take them one at a time.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't really read them. I assure you.
Good. I've got my first one.
Okay.
The original is Aerial Volley, which for a green is an instant that says it deals 3 damage divided as you choose among 1, 2, or 3 target creatures with flying.
Okay.
It's going to be Aerial Scourge.
Ooh, that's good.
And 1, 2, or 3 angry angels that you control deal damage to a creature a creature that your opponent controls.
Cool.
Aerial Scourge.
Aerial Scourge.
That should be angry angels. So no Sigarda.
Yeah.
But the rest of them are good.
Okay, here I have Charging Griffin, which is 3 and a white for a 2-2 with Flying Obs. When it attacks, gets +1/+1.
Yeah.
I'm going to change this to Charging Gargoyle. So it's going to be like a gargoyle.
Yeah.
And so gargoyles usually have Defender in Magic.
Yeah.
So it's going to have Defender. And then whenever it receives damage, you can flip it. It's flip card.
Yeah.
When it's dealt damage, flip it. And it becomes Charging Gargoyle, which is a 2-2 flyer that gets +1/+1 when it attacks.
Okay.
But then it goes back to being, so the next, after it deals damage, it flips again and becomes just the little sitting gargoyle.
Just a little stone gargoyle.
Yeah.
Cute.
That's kind of cute.
Blood Cursed Knight, which I feel like might have been a little Innistradian already. 1 white and a black for a creature, a vampire knight, 3-2, as long as you control an enchantment, gets +1/+1 and has lifelink. I'm going to give it, as long as you control an enchantment, you gain, whenever it deals damage, you gain a life, and you also drain a life. So it's really hitting.
Yeah.
For additional.
I like that.
I mean, basically, I just gave it the same thing as it already had. but...
Innistradi. But, you
know, a little bit more Innistradian. And it's a blood-cursed scout.
Okay. That makes sense.
Or Cathar. It's a blood curse Cathar.
Ooh, Cathar.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what creature type we should have chosen. Cathar.
Oh my god.
All right, I've got Goblin Piledriver, our rare. 1 and a red for a 1-2. Protection from blue randomly. When it attacks, it gets +2/+0 for each other attacking goblin. This is going to be turned into Goblin Blood Driver. So... It's really a social message, besides being a magic card, to encourage you to give blood at your local blood donation center. Goblin Blood Driver. And the art is like a little blood van, and the goblin's like got his, you know, his veins or whatever. But the blood from his veins is going right into a vampire's mouth. But he can't see because the vampire's on the other side of the van.
Gross.
Yeah. Weird. That vampire is siphoning off of this Goblin Blood Driver, and he doesn't even know. Like, he was trying to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. But the goblin's just, the vampire is just taking it.
Yeah.
It still has protection from blue, and it is 1 and a red, of course, and it's still a 1-2. And whenever it attacks, each other vampire you control gets a +1/+1. How is this going to work? Whenever it attacks, each other vampire you control gets +1/+0 until end of turn.
Nice.
That's an interesting card.
That's weird.
It makes sense with the art, though.
Yeah.
That's why.
It does make sense with the air.
Okay.
I have War Oracle. Waracle.
Waracle!
2 white-white. Human Cleric. 3/3 Lifelink Renown. 1. Really good card.
Oh, Renown. Gosh.
I like it. So this is, instead of War Oracle, it's going to be Herald of the Inquisition.
Ooh.
It's going to be 2 black-white. And instead of being a 3/3, it's still a Human Cleric. But it has death touch instead of lifelink and still a 3-3. Yeah,
that's nice.
Yeah.
All right, I have Enshrouding Mist, which we all remember was 1 white for an instant. Target creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn. Prevent all damage that would be dealt to it. If it's renowned, untap it. It was a pretty okay combat trick back in the day. This is going to be changed to Choking Mist. Choking Mist.
Okay.
It is still 1 white, and it's still an instant. Target creature gets -1/-1 until end of turn. Damage cannot be prevented. tap it.
I have Weight of the Underworld, 3 and a black. Ooh. For an enchantment aura. Enchant creature, it gets -3/-2. Instead of Weight of the Underworld, it's going to be Burden of Guilt.
Oh, that's good.
Right?
What a good name.
It's Burden of Guilt. Basically does the same thing.
I have Ringwarden Owl. I liked this card. 3 blue-blue for a 3/3 flying prowess owl. Mm-hmm. This is going to turn into a Ringworm Owl. If you've ever dealt with a ringworm on some of your animals, you know that it's a fungal infection that takes forever to go away and is terrible. If you live on a farm, you especially know what this is. Ringworm Owl is still a 3/3 for 5 with flying, and it doesn't have death touch, but it has, what is it, where it deals damage and -1/-1 counters.
Infect?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm just putting a new mechanic.
I don't know if you can put infect. That's not making a card Innistrad.
Okay, how about this? Whenever it becomes blocked, target blocking creature...
just dies spontaneously.
Just gets summoning sickness the next turn. So So it can never attack back. So if you're going to block this thing, then that creature gains summoning sickness again. And yeah. It's kind of annoying.
This is Maritime Guard, 1 and a blue for a 1/3 vanilla.
Okay.
And instead of being Maritime Guard, it's Drownyard Guard.
Yeah, that works.
Drownyard Guard, same thing, 1 and a blue for a 1/3, except it's a creature zombie.
Whoa.
And it has Skulk.
So this is a Crone Sergeant. Do you remember this card? I never would have.
Oh, yeah. It's First Strike for a 2/2. Right? And it gets Renown?
Yep. Renown 1 for 2 and a red. Yeah. Very, very well done. This is not going to be a Crone Sergeant because that doesn't make any sense anymore. This is going to be Town Hall Sergeant. So somebody who stands out and guards the Town Hall. Still has First Strike. It's 2 and a red for a 2/2. Doesn't have Renown 1, but it has First Strike if you control an equipment. If there's just like an equipment on the battlefield.
This is Sigil of Valor. 2 for an equipment. Whenever it attacks alone, it gets +1/+1 until end of turn for each other creature you control. Equip 1. Instead of Sigil of Valor, it's going to be Sigil of Malice.
Yeah.
You can, let's see. Ooh, okay, so on its front side, it just says this. But if it deals combat damage to a player, then it does an accursed witch.
Yeah.
Situation where it flips. So the creature has to deal damage, but once it does, this flips and it curses your opponent. Where on your upkeep, they lose a life, you gain a life.
Okay. Sorry, I'm still laughing about Ringworm all giving summoning sickness to something. Because, like, I like that it's, like, making it sick.
Yeah.
But it's just such a terrible mechanic because you're like, no, it's summoning sick. I gave it.
Like, you can't. It's so weird. It does not interact well with, like, the way that the game works.
Okay. Boggart Brute. 2 and a red for a menace. 3/2. This is now going to become Bloody Brute. Yeah. Because, duh. And it's still going to have menace. And it's just going to be, a vampire. A very strong, muscular vampire with blood dripping off his pecs. Every girl's dream.
Yep. Man, why can't I just find a nice guy who has bloody, blood all over bloody his pecs? Gross.
I bet there's one out there for you, Megan. Some CrossFit.
Nope. A CrossFit murderer?
Yeah.
Every girl's dream. CrossFit murderer.
The CrossFit murderer is next at 9. This is Nantuko Husk. Oh.
Yeah, man.
This card is still a card. 2 and a black, sacrifice creature, gets +2/+2 until end of turn. It's an insect, by the way.
It's a zombie insect.
Maybe we should have chosen insect. That would have been really weird.
It would have been fun. I'm very excited about hounds.
Yeah, me too. It's a 2/2, and instead of Nantuko Husk, it's just going to be called Corn Husk, because there's some scarecrows in Innistrad, and what are they protecting but the cornfields? So Corn Husk, 2 and a black.
Are scarecrows exclusively corn protectors?
I think mainly. I don't know what else they're protecting.
Wheat.
Do birds? Oh, I suppose they come in and try and get that wheat.
Probably.
So Corn Husk is still 2 and a black for a 2/2. And every time a creature is sacrificed, you cannot sacrifice it to the Corn Husk. You get a corn counter on Corn Husk, and once you get 5 corn counters on Corn Husk, it pops as a la a microwave popcorn. It flips over into Corn Baby.
No.
And Corn Baby just looks like a giant kernel of popcorn, and it's a 10/10 with trample. Sorry, just the idea of a card called Corn Baby. It's too much for me right now.
Oh, gosh.
Corn Baby.
Oh, gosh.
Like, oh, no, you're one corn counter away from Corn Baby. Well, everybody, that's our show. Thanks for listening. Of course, catch us this Thursday on twitch.tv/magic for a community super league. We'll be piloting some doggy dogs. Doing it doggy style this Thursday.
No.
Well, I mean, we literally.
No. Oh, that's right. Everybody check us out. It'll be on twitch.tv/magic. You can also find us on Twitter at MTAcast, via email magictheamaturing@gmail.com, on Facebook MTAcast or Magic the Amaturing.
Guess what? We're on Snapchat now.
That's right. Snap.
Snap at us.
Snap at us.
Or at us that's on Snap is what I meant.
Yeah, that's you don't snap at people.
What do you do? Oh, okay. Yeah, we're MTAcast on Snapchat, so we're like all the cool kids out there.
On Snapchat.
And we'll do some snaps for you all the time, so get ready for that.
Yep.
Of course, you can be a patron on patreon.com/MTAcast. We've recently set a new goal, which I think is super fun.
Yeah.
So I hope we hit it. The professor will be doing a bloopers video of all of our greatest bloopers of all time.
Yep.
Which, if you you don't know, but we know partially, that there have been some epic bloopers over the history of when we've been recording this video podcast.
Yeah.
And I am really excited, so I hope we hit that level because it will be hilarious.
Yeah.
We also just got new bracelets in, so we have a brand new color bracelet ready to go out to the $2 and up an episode subscribers. So please consider heading over there and making a donation if you enjoy the show from week to week, if it gives you a little something, whatever that may be. Come over and be our friend and join our Patreon family. Of course, at Twitter, at MTAcast is where we do most of our communication and it's the best way to reach us. Yeah, so I guess that's all I have to say about life, you know?
What have we been doing?
A magic podcast.
I took a Mucinex a couple hours ago.
God damn it.